Okay, let us compose our mind, huh? Develop the faith, the sadha, virya. Then mindful and visha commence the puja. Yeah. Namo Bunsi Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Bunsi Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Bunsi Si Jia Mo Ni Fo. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa.Arahang sama sambuto bhagawa Buddhang bhagawantang abhiwademi Swakato bhagavata dhammo Dhammang namasamiSupatipanno bhagavato sāvakasaṅgho saṅghaṁ namāmi Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassaNamo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhang saranang gacchami Dhammang saranang gacchamiSanghang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchamiTatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami Adina dana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyamiSuramiraya Majjhapavadatthana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami Sadhu 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 Okay, let us pay respect to Trupa Jam Buddhang Pujayame.Dhammang pujayami Sanghang pujayami Okay, you can be seated. Oh, Mahesia. Thanks for the bacang yesterday your mom brought over, yeah. Oh, she made herself. Oh, my son took one this morning. He said very nice. Okay, today, yeah, before we go through the six patriarch platform sutta, yeah, we got this J. Krishnamurti code in front of you. Anybody don't have? Yes. Yeah. Enough to go around or not? Enough, huh? Yeah. I will try to go through briefly with you all on this J. Krishnamurti quote on meditation. You have to understand what is meditation. And the definition by Krishnamurti is very profound and exactly as per the Buddha's teaching. But the language used is like it is very different. But when you understand, it's the same. So if you want to have clearer understanding, you go and listen to last Thursday's talk and last Tuesday's talk. I explain in very great detail. I approach it from two different approaches. So if you listen to them, you will understand. So today, I will not go into it any more detail. I will just run through it quickly so that you can develop a clear understanding of it when you listen to the Tuesday and Thursday class. Then after that, we can continue with the Six Patria Platform Sutta. We are using the commentary by Master Xuan Hua. We are on page 240. Later, we will go into this. Then you can get ready the page, verse on opening a sutta also. That is before page 1, the forward. I understand there's another lady from Singapore. She got another version of the Six Patria Platform Sutta commentary by another author. But I told her, don't worry, it's just another commentary. What we are more interested in is the actual sutta of the Six Patria Platform Sutta. So when we go through this sutta, we will discuss the actual meaning behind. I will also read through the commentary by Xuan Hua. Then if you got whatever commentary, you can also bring it up. Then I will guide you along and explain to you all the actual teaching so that you can have a clear grasp of what Hui Ning teach. The sutta itself is more important than the commentary. Well, commentary is dependent on who the commentary, who the commentator that wrote the commentary, understand it and express it. Okay, now we will go through the J. Krishnamurti quote first. The heading is when thought has understood its own beginning. So this is an extract from the quote itself. I will read through the quote quickly, then I will briefly run through it so that you can develop the understanding. Then go back and listen to the Tuesday and the Thursday class recording. The whole detailed explanation is there. According to J. Krishnamurti, meditation is to be aware of every thought and of every feeling. Never to say it is right or wrong, but just watch it and move with it. In that watching, you begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. And out of this awareness comes silence. Silence put together by thought is stagnation, is dead. But the silence that comes when thought has understood its own beginning, the nature of itself, understood how all thought is never free, but always old. This silence is meditation, in which the meditator is entirely absent, for the mind has emptied itself of the past. So this is the quote by J. Krishnamurti from the book Freedom from the Known. You know what is known, isn't it? Whatever that you can have knowledge of is the known. Means it comes from memory. every knowledge that you accumulate in your memory. That's why freedom from the known means freedom from memory, from thought. When the mind is liberated, it will go beyond thought, beyond time. It will realize the timeless. The timeless, which is the unconditioned. Whereas those that are within the field of thought, they are knowledge-based. They don't lead to wisdom. The field of thought is limited because thought itself is limited. So all this, you can never understand until you have meditated, until you have awakened. Then in order to really understand what is thought and how does the individual living being create thought since birth until now, after you develop the initial conditioning to arise the thought, especially when you go through the birth stage. Then as a baby, you got very little thought during the early days. The baby got no memory, that's why there is no thought. They have the senses within their physical body. And because of the senses, there is a mind, consciousness trapped inside. So as a baby, you are more pure in that sense. You don't have all the views, opinion, memory and conditioning that normal adult human being has. Because your brain is still very, very, very like a clean slate. You know what is a clean slate? Clean slate means you are not influenced yet. You don't have any knowledge of things yet. You don't even have words. You don't even have memories. You are just a very pure and naive baby. That's why they are very cute. They are incapable of cunningness, deceitfulness. They are very innocent in the sense that they just do what is natural. Then their perception are very pure because there is no word, no concept, no stirring of the mind born of views and opinion. There is no conditioning from the memory. They don't have all those knowledge yet. So as a baby, your mind is relatively pristine or relatively a clean slate. That's why baby learn very fast. They understand very fast because they listen attentively. Then whatever they hear, they listen, they learn. And this is how you should meditate and learn. When you meditate with a silent mind, via the direct seeing, without the interference of the views, opinion and conditioning from your memory, you learn very fast. But human beings' problem is because of ignorant delusion. You start to develop a lot of views, opinion and conditioning via all this exposure to the life that you are exposed to while you come to this world. Since birth until now, your parents condition you, your education conditions you, society condition you, and many, many things actually condition you. Your belief system, which is what you hold on to as your religion and other things. Then you have your race, your culture. All this, they condition the living being. Yeah, Alicia, they are here. Brother Song also here. Yeah, join us. Yeah. So what I try to explain to you is when you are a kid, a baby, very young, you seldom have thought. That's why you are very innocent, very naive, very cute. But as you grew up, you become conditioned. And because of that, you develop cunningness, selfishness, emotion, and all those things. Then sometimes you develop fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation. So all these are the result of the Noble Truth teaching as explained or proclaimed by the Buddha. He said, in this world, there is a lot of things that can give rise to suffering. The realities of life and existence, the first Noble Truth, it type of reality. They are birth, old age, sickness, and death. First four. Followed by separation from loved ones and prized possession that you hold on to or cling on to. And when you are with people whom you don't like, it's another reality. Then there is also what they call when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met, again you feel unhappy, your condition is suffering. Then finally, the eighth condition is the Buddha defined, the final summary is, in short, all of suffering comes about because of your self-delusion that conditions you to grasp and cling onto this so-called five aggregate of form and mind, or the living beings, deludedly, because you think it's real, you think it's you. So when you grasp and cling to this form and mind, which is the five aggregate, nama, rupa, or rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, then suffering will be the result. And due to suffering, your mind has a lot of affliction. Your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, unhappiness, they are the result of all this self-delusion, your ignorance that condition you to cling to grasp and hold. And when you give meaning without understanding, you suffer. So this five aggregate of form and mind that the Buddha talked about, which has two aspects like I have explained to you. One is as a living being. You have a physical body, you have a consciousness trapped inside. So the consciousness, the Buddha subdivide into four aspects. He said your mind, which is the consciousness itself and its content, can feel, can perceive, can arise mental thinking, mental activity, mental intention, mental states. All of mental movement or whatever your mind can do, that itself is the aggregate of sankhara. Then finally your mind can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. So because of these four aggregate plus the physical body, you have the first aspect, five aggregate, as a living being. For our case, it's a human being. And the Buddha said, this is not you. This has a universal characteristic of impermanent, leading to suffering. And because they are impermanent, they are conditioned arising entity. Hence, not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this entity can own things. All this can be mine. This is a delusion. And when you understand this, you will liberate your mind. You can become enlightened, awakened. And this is what the teaching is all about. Then there is a second aspect of this five aggregate of form and mind. The Buddha said, not only as a human being or a living being, the first aspect, every moment of consciousness, when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile feel or think, that mind that can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, that itself also has its own five aggregate of form and mind. Then as we all know, the Buddha subdivide the mind into four more aggregates, the four aggregates of feeling, perception, activity of mind state and consciousness. In Pali is Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. Then how did the fifth aggregate enter the mind? we have the mental form, mental rupa. The mental form enters the mind through the perception aggregate. Whatever you come to perceive from the external phenomenal world, that is the mental form. Like when you perceive the Buddha image at the back through your seeing consciousness and your memory, the external form, the Buddha's image, will enter your mind. And that mental form, together the four aggregates, becomes the five mental aggregates of form and mind. So the Buddha said, if you attach to this five mental aggregate of form and mind, that is also self-delusion. Suffering will also arise. And this is what thought is all about. J. Krishnamurti used the word thought. And thought is consciousness and is content. The rest you go and listen to Tuesday class and Thursday class sharing is all there. So thought is what Krishnamurti is interested in. And he also know feeling play a great role. That's why he isolated feeling out. He said this thought and this feeling, you have to be aware, you have to be mindful of them. That's the reason why now I go through the quote with you, you will understand. According to J. Krishnamurti, the meditation is to be aware. Aware of what? Every thought and of every feeling. Which means you must be constantly aware of every thought and every feeling. And what is thought? Five aggregate of form and mind. The mental aspect, the second aspect. So this five aggregate of form and mind, which the Buddha referred to under the second aspect, is what the Paticca-samuppada is all about. Dependent origination, the 12 link. And the Buddha's teaching is exactly the same in the sense that he said the only way to realize enlightenment is to develop the mindfulness of the four foundations of mindfulness. And these four foundations of mindfulness, they are within the five aggregates. The first foundation is kaya, the physical form. You anchor your mind to the physical form to train your mind to have sati, mindfulness. So kaya is physical form, and it can also be mental form. Then after that, the other aggregate is feeling, perception, activity of mind and consciousness. So the four foundations of mindfulness also have this. That's why the Buddha said the first foundation is kayanupassana, mindfulness of the physical form. Then mindfulness of feeling, vedananupassana, which is the mind aggregate. Then the third one is mindfulness of content of consciousness, which is citta, the thought itself. Then finally, Dhamma Nupassana, mindfulness of all the Dhamma, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach, which are the five mental hindrance, five spiritual faculty, five aggregate of form and mind, seven factors of enlightenment, six internal sense bases and six external sense bases, and the four noble truths, etc. So all this, they are within the mental aggregate, the five aggregate of mind, which is thought itself. Then Krishnamurti go one step further. He said meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. He didn't stop there. He said never to say it is right or wrong, but just to watch it and move with it. This is very important. The moment you say right or wrong, what are you doing? What are you doing? The moment you try to comment or interpret what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel or think, what are you doing? You are interfering with what you see or what you perceive. And that is already the arising of the mind. You are lost in thought. You are no longer in sati. You are preoccupied with your thought process. When you are preoccupied with the thinking and you are stirring your mind through your views and opinion and your conditioning, your belief system, your so-called belief system, which could be your religion and other things, then you are not listening. That's why the art of listening is to listen attentively without the interfering of the thought, without the interfering of your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. That's why you just listen attentively, which is mindfulness, awareness, sati. But when you try to interpret, or what they call command, then you already create your own stirring of the mind, which is the arising of the heedless thinking. You are preoccupied in what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you tactically feel and think. The moment you do that, you are no longer aware. That's why you are not in the meditative state. So this one is what the Buddha called mindfulness. When you are mindful, you just aware. Don't try to know, like I always tell you in the meditation. Who is trying to know? Eh? Who is trying to know? And the thought. And the thought, when it's active, how can you be mindful? True or not? When the thought is active, meditating means what? The thought is noting. The thought is meditating, wanting to do this. Then the thought becomes the commentator, interpreter. So they start to comment. Is this right? Is this what the Buddha teach? Is this what Brother Teo say? So this thought is chattering, verbalizing, through knowledge, through accumulated memory, through all the so-called Dhamma in inverted comma. That's how they get into trouble. Then they come out with method and technique. So who is doing those meditation? That is thought-based meditation, where the thought will interpret, then the thought will do all those meditation. The real meditation is silent, no doing, it's just aware. That's why this definition is very important. Meditation is to be aware of every thought and every feeling. This is what the Buddha meant by heedfulness. Constantly meditative, ever mindful. Yeah. Then never to command, interpret, or stir the mind by saying it's right or wrong. But just to watch it and move with it. That's why I say when you meditate, you just relax, silent, aware. Don't try to know. And through the awareness, the mindfulness, it will awaken. The awakening is without thought, without concept, without words. Out of that is what meditation is all about. So Krishnamurti said, in that watching or awareness, we begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. This is what the dependent origination is, paticca samuppada is. You will start to see your own 5 degrees of mind, how upon contact consciousness arises, then how you input the content, born of your wrong view, wrong thought, conditioning, your scars of memory and all those things, your insecurity, your phobia, your selfishness, your emotion, your stupidity and your doubt. So all this, when they start to interfere, then you become entangled, you become afflicted. That's how the cause of suffering arises. Then you start to see the movement of thought. Wrong thought condition, wrong feeling, which has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then this feeling will be conditioned into craving straight away. Craving are the positive and negative and neutral feeling. So pleasant, unpleasant, like and dislike. These are the duality. That's why when you comment and say it's right or wrong, pleasant and unpleasant, you already create the mental hindrance of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sensation, which are sensual desire and ill will. So when mental hindrance arise, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why you lose your ability to be mindful, to meditate. So this part is very important. You begin to understand the whole movement of thought and feeling. How thought condition feeling, and feeling condition craving, craving condition grasping, grasping condition becoming, and becoming condition birth. Then arise the whole mess of suffering. When you start to see this, you will develop the clear understanding. And Krishnamurti said, and out of this awareness comes, what is it inside there? Silent. This is the real meditation. You must come to this silent on your own through the understanding that thought, which is the mental five aggregate of form and mind, they are impermanent. They have these universal characteristics of suffering when you attach and cling and give meaning. Then because they are impermanent, they are not real, not you, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why they call it non-self, empty, anatta nature. So this understanding will allow you to develop the ability to be silent without going to concentration, without having to focus or go into absorption, like those thought-based meditation. That's why the next sentence is very important. Krishnamurti says, silent put together by thought means thought-based meditation is stagnation and death. Because that one is not a free mind. That's why in Sheng Yan Fasi, the Fa Ku San teacher, he teach silent illumination. He said silent without illumination is wrong samadhi, mitya samadhi. It's not the true meditation. Your silence must come with illumination. And what is illumination? Illumination is awareness. I write this word down. Right? Silent illumination. So he teaches a meditation that will lead to this type of mind. He called it the silent illumination. When the silent don't have this illumination, which is awareness or sati, then you are doing thought-based meditation. You are not developing the awareness-based meditation, which is the four foundation of mindfulness, satipatthana. So Krishnamurti say, and out of this awareness comes silence. Silence put together by thought is stagnation, is dead. But the silence that comes when thought has understood its own beginning means you know how thought comes about. Thought is respond to memory. That's why I say when you are a baby, you don't have thought. But as you grew up with more conditioning, more memory, more knowledge, you create thought. So thought is responsible. So when you have understood its own beginning, means you understand how thought arises, then the nature of itself, means the characteristic of this thought, they are impermanent, leading to suffering. Because they are impermanent, they are not a permanent unchanging entity that you can call me or I. That's why it's empty, anatta nature. Then understood how all thought is never free, but always old. I already told you, thought is egoic. Before you are enlightened, the thought will be egoic. It's never free, because it is with delusion. So, this part, you have to understand. Then thought is always old, because what is thought? Thought is respond to memory. Memory is always of the past. Otherwise, there is no memory. You remember something that has happened before. That's why you accumulate as memory. And Mahayana says accumulation, qi, is the cause of suffering. That's why when you accumulate, it will lead to suffering. That's why accumulation itself is suffering. And what do you accumulate? The past memory. All of your experiences in life, good and bad, you accumulate them. And what are they? They are your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, scars of memory, conditioning, views and opinion, and all these are already described in the Tuesday and Thursday class. You go and listen. They are there. So when you understand this, your mind becomes different. Then you understand the nature of thought, the characteristics of thought. That's why I understood how all thought is never free, but always old, because it's from memory. It's respond to memory. Then this silence is meditation, in which the meditator is entirely absent, for the mind has emptied itself of the past. That silence, which is born of understanding the characteristic of thought, the limitation of thought, all this, including the characteristics of thought, the universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, will allow you to have the ability to become quiet, silent, and still. Because you will come to the understanding, think also like that, don't think also like that. Nothing is going to change. Condition like that, things will be like that. You can come to term with the reality. You can come to the point of understanding that the moment is the only reality in life. And within that moment, the causes and conditions are really there. It has to be like that. That's why you have to accept what is. You cannot go against the reality, which is the moment. And mindfulness is to be aware of the moment, from moment, to understand how all this happened and how the nature's law is following all this dependent origination teaching as proclaimed by the Buddha, the 12 link paticca samuppada. So when you understand all this, your mind becomes different. You are no longer deluded, no longer deceived. Then you can act. Means at that moment when something happens, you can act. Because there is no fear, no stirring of mind, no reaction of mind. You can come to terms with that reality through that mindfulness and the awareness, knowing that this itself is meditation. The silent mind that awakens to all this understanding, then transform it into a free mind that is completely still and aware, just the way the true mind is, before your heedless thinking, stirring, reaction of mind, through your delusion, self-delusion. So all this will lead to the silent mind, which is the meditative mind, which is meditation. So all along, what I have been sharing with you is to understand Hui Neng's teaching. Hui Neng's teaching is about the silent mind. That's why he said there are three things that are very important to realize this mind. And Hui Neng's teaching has this uniqueness. He said, first, this mind must be without thought. This is the first characteristic of a meditative mind. The mind that is without thought means without thinking, without the heedless thinking, without the stirring, the reaction, the aggregate of mind. That's why it is just aware in sati. And that is the first stage. If you can develop that first stage understanding of no thought, but it must be a free mind, like what Krishnamurti said, not a conditioned arising mind, not in concentration or absorption or one-pointedness, through method, technique, and focusing. No. It just, the mind is completely free, just aware. And through the awareness, you develop the understanding and the wisdom, then the silence comes about through a natural process. And that is the real samadhi. Not the one that uses method and technique and thought-based meditation to focus, concentrate, and get into calmness. But that type of silent calmness is without illumination, like what Sun Yen Fa Shi, they all came to realize. So mindfulness is a very important aspect of the silent mind. If the silent mind is not aware, that is not the teaching as taught by the Buddha. That's why that sati must be there. So with this, hopefully, yeah, you all can develop the understanding. Yeah, you can rejoice. Huh? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah. So this Krishnamurti code has its own uniqueness and beauty when you understand. Yeah. Okay. Now we can go to the Platform Sutta. Huh? Let us turn to the opening verse. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, turn to page 240. Huh? We will continue from there. States of defilement. State of defilement here refers to all the social and political situations. You should not be molded by the society, but rather transform it. Teaching living beings, do not be taught by them. Sorry, teach living beings. Do not be taught by them. Once when I noticed that one of my students has been talking on the phone for over 1 hour, and this is Master Xianhua's commentary, eh? I asked her what she was doing. I was trying to convert my boyfriend to Buddhism. That was the reply, eh? From that lady. She said. Then Xianhua asked, really? What is he now? Then the lady replied, he's a Catholic, she said. Be careful. Yeah? He doesn't convert you, Xianhua said. His belief in Catholicism is firm. Take care that he doesn't take you across to become a Christian. Sure enough, not long afterward, she ran off. Now what she believes, whether she saved others or was saved by them, is unknown. So this is the example that Xianhua gave. The non-defilement of the self nature is called the honored among the multitudes. Living beings are all defiled. If you wish to be an exceptional individual, you must leave desire behind. To separate yourself from desire is to be a great hero and true student of Buddha Dhamma. Unless you correct your fault, what little Buddha Dhamma you do know is useless, of not much use. So here, defilement means your craving, your desire. And craving and desire is the cause of suffering. Craving will lead to desire. Desire will lead to grasping, clinging and holding on to things. So through delusion, it will lead to suffering. Yeah, this is the cause of suffering. As I Huining said, the non-defilement of the self-nature is called the honored among the multitude. Yeah. But that nature is not a conditioned state. That nature cannot come out and live life. There is no word, no concept, no interpretation of anything. So the non-defilement of the self-nature is called the honored among the multitude. That's why that is your true mind, your true nature. Then living beings, because of the mundane mind and delusion, they are all defiled. So if you wish to be an exceptional, you must leave desire behind. That's why your craving, born of self-delusion, born of ignorance, you must leave behind. Then to separate yourself from desire is to be a great hero and true student of Buddha Dhamma. Unless you correct your fault, what little Buddha Dhamma you do know is useless. So correcting your fault is very important. You know the meaning or not? Huh? Correcting your fault, your mistake. your wrong view, your delusion. That's why you keep on straightening your view. So just now I didn't explain the whole thing. Hui Ning's teaching got three major characteristics. First, he said no thought, which is defined by Krishnamurti. That no thought is a free mind, not a conditioned state. So no thought is just the beginning. You have to be ever mindful. Then you will awaken to the understanding. Then that mind becomes the meditative mind, which has the universal, which has the characteristics of no thought. No thought means constantly aware. Then you use it to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha, means cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Then through that you awaken. After you awaken to the universal characteristic, like what Krishnamurti mentioned, you understand thought, the limitation of thought. Then how thought divide and create all those division leading to all the conflict. All the, what they call, argument. That condition, all the misunderstanding leading to war, suffering and all those things. So this is what thought is all about. So when you see how thought divide and create so much suffering and misery, you will come to understand that thought is impermanent, lead to suffering. It's empty, non-self, not you. That's why when we meditate, we will come to know the five degrees of form and mind. They keep on arising and passing away. And your true nature never disappear. Means they are not you. If they are you, the five degrees of form and mind, when they arise and they pass away, you should die with it. Feeling arise and pass away, you didn't die. Perception arise and pass away, you didn't die. Mental state arise and pass away, you didn't die. Consciousness arise and pass away, you didn't die. Then who are you? What are you? If the five degrees of form and mind is not you, impermanent leading to suffering, then why did they arise in you? All this is meditation. So through mindfulness, through awareness, the silent mind, you will come to understand their characteristic, that they are all dependent, originating, condition arising, therefore not what you think you are. So through this understanding, you will understand that the whole phenomenal world is an illusion, not what you think, because they are all dependent, originating, condition arising within the conditioned world. The unconditioned is completely free of all this, without all this. So because of that, that wisdom will liberate your mind. Then you will come to understand that there is this characteristics of no mark. So from no thought, Hui Ning introduced the teaching of no mark, means no mark of a self meditating, cultivating, taking beings across. Then no mark of living being for you to take across. Then no mark of life, no mark of Dhamma or teaching and all that. But these are all pertaining to the conditioned world. So when you have this understanding and wisdom, these first two characteristics or no thought leading to no mark will be very, very powerful. Then it will lead you to have the ability to live your life differently. That's how the third characteristic arises. The mind must have no dwelling. This mind, you understand, is karmically conditioned out for you to use to come to this world, the form of mind, not you. So this mind, there are two aspects. One is the conditioned arising mind, mundane mind. The other one is the true mind. But living beings' inability to see the true mind grabs and cling on to the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind, the thinking mind. That's how they fall. That's how they develop the self-delusion and become afflicted. So the Third characteristics of Hui Ning's teaching is you must not dwell. No dwelling. The mind must not dwell. Because everywhere you dwell, you create what they call suffering. What is dwelling? Dwelling is to arise the mundane mind. Whatever you come to perceive, you dwell there. Like your true mind, without a center, it doesn't dwell anywhere. Then it can be aware of specific phenomenal awareness, but it doesn't dwell because it's just aware. But the moment you dwell, means you create thought. And through perception, whatever you see, you focus, you dwell. Whatever you hear, like my voice, you focus, you dwell. So all our dwelling is what the mundane mind is all about. So attachment, clinging and grasping to this fiery of form and mind is the cause of suffering. That's why if you cannot have a mind that has got no dwelling, this mind will dwell and create his own self-delusion, leading to suffering. That's the reason why Hui Ning's teaching is very powerful. It takes you direct to the true mind to develop the understanding of his teaching. He doesn't have to waste time. You doesn't have to waste time on using the thought, which is the mundane mind, to meditate. To go through all the thought-based meditation that leads to delusion, further and further delusion. Then you lost yourself. And this is the reason why Hui Ning's teaching is so powerful. He takes you directly to the true mind, which has none of all this mundane mind, conditioned arising mind, the condition within the conditioned world. And it's the true mind that can understand truth, can awaken to truth, can liberate itself. Then through that wisdom born of understanding, the mundane mind that realizes itself will cease. And it's the cessation of form and mind that lead to the realization of enlightenment, which is Nibbana, the unconditioned. So all these are linked, connected to the teaching. So Hui Ning's teaching is unique because it takes you direct to the true mind so that you don't have to go through all this. But without understanding, you cannot develop the cultivation of what he has taught you. Because human being is so heedless, so deluded. To them, the only mind that they have or understand is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. That's why this mundane mind, if you cannot cause it to cease, it will continue to haunt you, to create suffering and misery for you, to delude you, to deceive you, to condition you into delusion, and all the what they call subsequent suffering. So, understanding the Buddha's teaching and his teaching, if you combine them together, then your meditation can progress very fast. So what must you do? Now we discuss it. What must you do? After hearing the explanation of Sakyamuni Buddha's teaching, Jai Krishnamurti's teaching, and now Hui Ning's teaching, what must you do? You must cease your... What must you cease? The thinking mind, the mundane mind. The heedless thinking mind. The conditioned arising mind. How can you cease that mind? The Buddhists or the so-called meditator, what are they doing? Most of them. Since the distant past until now. They use thought in it. To meditate in it. They only can make it quiet and peaceful by focusing and concentrating. If they just leave it, the mind becomes heedless, think a lot, create a lot of thinking, heedless thinking. And you try to be peaceful, you cannot. But the thought that try is actively creating more thought. And that is suppression, control, no use. So what must you do? According to the Buddha's teaching, why are you not peaceful? Why can't you realize your true mind? Yeah? Use the mind, yeah? The mind, yeah? Yeah, thank you. So that we can have it recorded.
Because of the five mental hindrances.
Very good, Sadhu. Because of the five mental hindrances. So now you are very clear. The Buddha said, because of mental hindrance. And what are mental hindrance? There are five, the Buddha said. Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness of mind and doubt. These five things, they are called mental hindrance because when they arise in your mind, they will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness or inner mindfulness. And this one I have explained in many of the sharing. The first two mental hindrance, which is very, very pronounced, sensual desire, you will. These are your right and wrong duality, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, what Krishnamurti said just now. The moment you try to say right or wrong, you get into trouble, where you create mental hindrance. That's why every moment of sense experience, what the human being do? Everything that you come to perceive, whether seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, you tend to discriminate in it. You tend to react and stir toward the sense experience. Whatever you see or you hear, you interpret it, then you stir your mind, like and dislike, pleasant. So you create mental hindrance. If every moment of sense experience, you are not at peace, you are always reacting and stirring your mind, creating mental hindrance, what will happen to you? What will happen to you? Means you keep on arising, sensual desire and ill will, which are mental hindrance. Then how can you be peaceful? Do you understand? Until it becomes so habitual. That's why we call it habitual tendency. This habitual tendency is what living being is all about. Through delusion, through conditioning, through memory, it continues to stir you and make you do all this type of thing. So this habitual tendency that condition you into heedless thinking, reaction and stirring, keep on creating the mental hindrance, will make you continuously heedless. That's why you can never be peaceful, the Buddha said. Then of course, sloth and torpor is when you don't see the importance of training the mind. When you attend a meditation class or a subject that you don't like, you become sleepy. Then when you don't have the understanding, when you do things with heedlessness, you will have problem in life. When you don't keep your precepts and all those things, when you have problem, you arise the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the sorrow and the lamenting. And this one lead to restlessness of mind. That's why the fourth hindrance is always there when you don't take care of your life. When you don't have mindfulness leading to heedfulness, leading to the wisdom. Then the last one, of course, is doubt. You don't understand what is going on. Sometimes life becomes like that. And sometimes life becomes the other way around. And life can be so full of suffering, misery, unhappy moments. Then this doubt will create a lot of further suffering because it's a mental hindrance. You don't know what is happening. Then you ask, why me? Why is God so unfair? What is going on? I have done everything. And yet, life is not what it's supposed to be. So all this is what the hindrance is all about. And in the teaching, the Buddha make it very clear. If you have this mental hindrance, if you are aware of them creating all this heedless thinking leading to all the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, leading to downfall in your life, which is bring about negative karma that leads to downfall, what must you do? Yeah? What must you do? What must you do? When you know that this mental hindrance is causing you the lack of peace, lack of ability to enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, what must you do? Use the mic. Huh? Pass the mic there. Don't pass to me. Huh? Yeah, push it up. Yes.
Develop the five spiritual faculties.
Very good. You must cultivate the opposite five, which the Buddha called the spiritual faculty. They will allow you to understand the spiritual teaching as taught by him. But most human beings, or so-called meditator or cultivator, or even a lot of Buddhists, you know what they do? They go and suppress and control and fight this mental hindrance. Last time when you meditate, you remember not? When you are sleepy, what you do? You become very unhappy. I come here to meditate, how come I am sleepy? Then you ask the monk or ask the teacher, then they say, okay, go and wash your face. Understand? That's what they do. Then sometimes they say, you don't have enough virya. So you must arise the spiritual zeal or put in the appropriate effort. Means you are fighting the sleepiness. Understand? Because your mind has craving. You want to overcome the sleepiness. Then likewise for the other hindrance. The mind is restless. When you cannot meditate, you sit down, a lot of thinking. What happened? You become very unhappy. Then, I train so hard, I come here to meditate. Again, I have not been able to make myself peaceful, to have some success in my, or to have some progress in my meditation. So what they do? They will go and focus, concentrate, and make themselves peaceful and calm. So they want to fight the lack of peace. So all this is trying to fight. Then when they focus and concentrate, they suppress the mind state. Means the restless thinking mind. They suppress it. Because they use energy field to lock it. They go into one-pointedness. They go into absorption of mind. So all this will fix the mind. But this mind is not a free mind. So because of what they do, they develop thought-based meditation. They develop the stagnant mind, which is dull and dead, like what Krishnamurti said. That's why they go into energy field, jhana and all those things. And that type of meditation will lead to peace, calmness, samatha, very strong energy field. That's where they go wrong. The Buddha's advice is, don't fight, don't suppress, don't control, don't do anything with the hindrance. Let it arise. Understand its characteristic. Then finally you will come to know that these are dependent originating, condition arising, it will come to pass, it will cease, like anger. When it arises, you have to understand how it arises. Well, before anger arises, there was no anger. So what is anger? Dependent originating, condition arising, not you. When the condition is not there, no more wrong view, no more attachment, no more clinging, no more grasping, then it ceases to be. That's how it comes and it goes. And if you cannot be aware to see all this, like what the Buddha said, you will come to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance come to be. Then as you continue to be aware, you will come to be aware of how the arisen mental hindrance is to be. And this is the meditation. This is the four foundation of mindfulness. But living beings are not doing that anymore. They go and focus, concentrate, and try to suppress and control and fight the mental hindrance. So like what Sister Padmasri has said is very good. The Buddha said, don't do anything. Allow them to arise and develop the wisdom. But before that, you must cultivate the opposite five, the spiritual faculty of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. Where these five are in place, the five mental hindrance automatically cease to be. So your focus is to train your mind to develop this five spiritual faculties. And you can train it in many ways, the Buddha said. One is through puja, like what we did. Yeah? When you do all this chanting, you recall to mind the nine great virtues of the Buddha. Then you pay respect. You reflect and contemplate on who the Buddha is. He is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. And because he is fully enlightened, his teaching is so unique, it can bring about enlightenment, liberation of mind, free from all suffering. So that itself will build up your faith in him, Sadha, leading to the spiritual zeal to follow his teaching, to cultivate the teaching, and to develop the mental faculty or spiritual faculty to understand his teaching. So all this will automatically arise. Then when you continue to have faith, Sadha Virya, it will drive you to cultivate. Then everything you do during the meditation session or Dhamma session, or even when you live your life, you develop your what they call training of mind to be mindful through the four foundations of mindfulness. Standing aware, sitting aware, walking aware, bowing aware, looking forward aware, bending, stretching, turning aware, answering nature's call aware, everything aware. Then when you pay respect through your puja, you develop awareness. When you chant, you develop awareness. When you offer puja, you develop awareness. And that is what the training is all about, the four foundations of mindfulness. Then when you stabilize that sati, it will become samadhi. And this is a free mind. And when sati and samadhi is there, you're sitting as they are, you will awaken. That's how wisdom come to be, the fifth spiritual faculty. And when your spiritual faculty is there, you can develop the meditation as taught by Hui Ning. The moment you have the spiritual faculty, the five mental hindrances, what happened to your mind? Yeah? What happened to your mind? Your mind is no longer heedless, isn't it? Because there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, which is sati and samadhi. Means you straight away already have sati and samadhi. That's why no need to train, no need method, no need technique. The moment you're silent, you're already in that meditative state. Then when you can stabilize this until it's so stable, when you come out into life, into activity, this daily mindfulness will follow you because your mind has stabilized and become sati. Means when your mind enters sati, means it's constantly aware. You have to train until that stability. Unless you have that stability of mindfulness, you cannot develop the real meditation, the four foundation of mindfulness, and the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path. That's why this whole understanding will allow you to progress very fast. The moment the spiritual faculty is stabilized, the first characteristic of Hui Ning's teaching, no thought, you realize it there and then. That's why a lot of Karyamita now can straight away go into the silent mind. And it's a free mind, no movement. But most of them are able to do it like what Eng Bi mentioned, when she's alone, not in the midst of activity, living life, talking to people and all those things. Then when they are in the form of meditation, most of them can have that. And that is the beginning. When you have the ability, you will have to continue to train that mind so that it can be in that state of mindfulness. Even when you are in a state of activity, starting from your home, your house, then as you come out of your house, driving and all those things, then go to office, live life, interacting with people. All this, you can train that mind. Because this sati leading to samadhi can stabilize even in the midst of activity, in the midst of life. And that is what meditation is all about. So meditation is not just formal sitting or cultivation. That one is just the initial stage to train the mind. That's why you need formal meditation to train your mind. Then after you have trained, you have to use this mind that is trained with the spiritual faculty to live life, to develop the ability to be aware in the midst of life. means this silent mind will be there throughout the day. Initially, it's your waking moment. Then later on, even when you go into your sleep, subconscious and unconscious moment, where the awareness will be there. The awareness is never, never missing, because that is your true nature. That is your true mind. It's always there. It's either when you are lost in thought, or you are with the awareness, the nature. So you can just be aware, it will be there. But the moment you become unconscious, or the moment you become heedless, then you lost the ability to be aware. That's why the initial training is very important. Then the moment you have that characteristics of no thought, then as you continuously silence your mind to develop the meditation, the daily mindfulness, the formal meditation, then you will awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering and non-self. Then when you have that, you will reach the second characteristic of no mind. You will know the form and mind is not real, not you. Straight away, there is no self-cultivating. There is no self-liberating or taking beings across. Then there is no living being. Then all these phenomenal world, conditioned arising world, they are all impermanent, leading to suffering. Conditioned arising, cause of no illusion, no reality. So all this you understand. The moment you understand this, you establish the second characteristic from no thought leading to no mind. Then after that, you have to develop the ability to live life until this mind, the true mind, continuously arise. That is what the third characteristic of no dwelling is all about. Means you must have the ability to have specific phenomenal awareness most of the time and spacious awareness without a center. Then you perfect the cultivation of the true mind. Then you can really move very far, the Bodhisattva way. In fact, the first level of no thought is already very good. You can reach that no thought as a free mind, you are destined for enlightenment. You are already very good. You already way beyond all those who do thought-based meditation. And you will have real Dhamma understanding unfolding within your nature. So, develop the spiritual faculty. Train your mind to have this daily mindfulness until it's very stable. Then don't try to know. Just cultivate. The awakening will arise. The understanding will arise. Then with that, you will come to understand the second characteristic of no mind. Then after that, you will go the full way, the Bodhisattva way. It becomes very easy. Then you will know how to cultivate the five stages of Bodhi mind development, leading to full perfection of the Bodhisattva way, leading to the perfection of the 10 paramitas to become Sama Sambuddha one day. So all these are possible with the understanding of the teaching that is available within this sasana. Okay? Then we move on. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we now go to the sutta proper. If you cultivate this practice, you take refuge with yourself. Common people do not understand that. And so from morning to night, they take the triple refuge precepts. They say they take refuge with the Buddha. But where is the Buddha? If they cannot see the Buddha, how can they return to him? Their talk is absurd. Then good knowing advisor, each of you examine yourself. Do not make wrong use of the mind. The Avatamsaka Sutta clearly states that you should take refuge with your own Buddha, not with some other Buddhas. If you do not take refuge with the Buddha in yourself, there is no one you can rely on. Now that you are self-awakened, you should each take refuge with the triple jewel of your own mind ground. Within yourself, regulate your mind and nature. Outside yourself, respect others. That is to take refuge with yourself. So Huineng is trying to teach you a deeper understanding of what refuge is. You see, this triple gem, a lot of people cannot understand. Who is the Buddha? The first question. If you say you take refuge with the triple gem, means you take refuge with the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. But then you must know what that refuge is. When you say you take refuge with the Buddha, you don't even know who the Buddha is, then what type of refuge are you taking? True or not? Okay, now we go into this discussion. Who is the Buddha? Who is the Buddha? Is the image at the back there the Buddha? Is all the Buddha image that you come to see in the temple the Buddha? If these are not the Buddha, then who is the Buddha? That's why you have to understand who you take refuge in. So what is the Buddha? The Buddha is the embodiment of what? His perfection, his wisdom and his virtue. He is perfect in wisdom and virtue. That's why you can say he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. If this is the Buddha that I take refuge in, then I will know. Each and every living being, you have that Buddha nature within you. Understand? Do you understand? You have the potential to realize that nature because you came from that. That is the source before you become what you are. Because this continuous birth and death in samsara, that your form and mind continuously evolve. At the very beginning, it was the Buddha nature. From the source, it started. Then, because of delusion, the first thought of ignorance that conditioned the primordial darkness, that conditioned the wrong thought, and conditioned you to become what you are now, develops the condition for you to forget what your original nature is. That's why you get yourself entangled with the mundane mind, the conditioned arising mind, the form and mind, the segmented life. Every life you come, you think you are that. That's why you continue to get lost. So what Huineng is trying to tell you is, you take refuge with your true nature. You don't take refuge with any other thing. But that true nature is the source of all things. That's why nothing is apart from it. It's like the Tao. Tao ke Tao. Fei chang Tao. The Tao that can be described or interpreted is not the true Tao. But yet, nothing is apart from the Tao. Because from the Tao, which is the source, everything come about. The mind right things come about. But whatever that can be spoken or described or interpreted, that is not the true Tao. But that belongs to the creation, the mundane, condition arising, phenomena of the Tao. And that is not the true. The true Tao, which is the source, has none of all this. Yeah. That's why, yet, nothing is apart from the Tao. So this is what Huineng is trying to tell you, advise you. When you take refuge, you must know what these refuge are. And this is the only refuge true that can liberate your mind. We are within this refuge, the teachings are there, the Four Noble Truths. Apart from this refuge, you cannot find the teaching. So that Buddha nature that can finally, through the cultivation, accumulate into perfection of the Ten Paramita leading to the omniscient awakening, means the realization of Sammasambuddhahood, that Buddha or Buddha nature sure have the teaching. That's why you take refuge with that, you will receive the teaching. Then the Dhamma is the teaching expounded by the Buddha, proclaimed by the Buddha. And that itself will have the teaching too. Then the third refuge is the Aryan Sangha, the noble disciple or enlightened disciple of the Buddha. If they are the enlightened disciple, means they have the Dhamma too, the teaching. Otherwise, they cannot awaken. So any of these three, where you take refuge, you develop causes and conditions and affinity with the Triple Gem. So that whenever you arise as a form and mind, you will have the condition to meet up with the Triple Gem because you take refuge in them. You commit your life to take refuge. That's why you chant Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. You chant with understanding, with faith. You develop, you plant the seed of Bodhi. You develop the causes and conditions for you to connect to Triple Gem every time your form and mind arise. Because this is refuge safe through understanding, you take that refuge. And when you cultivate that affinity through that understanding, you will link, you will connect. That's why it's important to take refuge. Okay? Now we go on. Eh? We see what Shenhua say within the commentary. The commentary, according to Shenhua, is that common people do not understand the principle of taking refuge. If you constantly say, I take refuge with the Buddha, just where is the Buddha? If you have never seen the Buddha, then how can you take refuge with him? If you say, I have seen him, you are lying. Because the Buddha is not the physical entity, understand not? That one is the vehicle that he come with, the Nimanakaya. The true Buddha is the embodiment of his wisdom and perfection of virtue. The sutta tell you to take refuge with your own Buddha, means your own Buddha nature, not with some other Buddha. The Buddha or your self nature is always present. But you don't know this, because until now, you never had the instruction of a good knowing advisor. Now that you have taken refuge, you should be clear about the Buddha of your own self nature. So this is what I have been explaining to you. Yeah? Then take refuge with enlightenment. Take refuge with what is right. Take refuge with the pure. Take refuge with enlightenment. And don't do stupid things. Take refuge with what is right and don't do what is wrong. Take refuge with the pure and don't do unclean things. So this is Qianhua's poem. Eh? Take refuge with the Triple Gem within your own mind ground. Yeah. If you really understand the Buddha Dhamma, you will respect not just your relative and friends, but everyone, even you don't know them. Instead of slapping someone when you see them and then throwing mud at his face, you must be the most respectful towards those who act the worst towards you. This is a fundamental responsibility of student of Buddhism. You say, you haven't really been bad to me, so how could I be bad to you? Isn't this extraordinary? It's just to take refuge with the Triple Gem of your own self-nature. So this is the commentary part. Eh? Then we go on to the sutta, the next one. Good knowing advisor, now that you have taken refuge in the Triple Gem, you should listen carefully while I explain to you the three bodies of a single substance, the self-nature of the Buddha, so that you may see the three bodies and become completely enlightened to your own self nature. Now that, he said, repeat after me. Huh? I take refuge with the clear, pure Dhamma body of the Buddha within my own body. I take refuge with the hundred thousands of my right transformation bodies of the Buddha within my own body. I take refuge with the complete and full reward body of the Buddha within my own body. Good knowing advisor, the form body is an inn. Eh? You know what is an inn? Eh? It's like a house that houses you. Eh? It cannot be returned to. The three bodies of the Buddha exist within the self nature of worldly being, But because they are confused, they do not see the nature within them. And so, seek the three bodies of the Tathagata outside themselves. They do not see that the three bodies of the Buddhas are within their own bodies. Listen to what I say, for it can cause you to see the three bodies of your own self nature within your own body. The three bodies of the Buddha arise from your own self nature and are not obtained from outside. What is the clear, pure Dhamma body? Buddha. The worldly people's nature is basically clear and pure, and the 10,000 Dhammas are produced from it. The thought of evil produces evil action, and the thought of good produces good action. Thus, all Dhamma exists within the self nature. This is like the sky, which is always clear, and the sun and the moon, which is always bright, and that if they are obscured by floating cloud, it is bright above the cloud and dark below them. But if the wind suddenly blow and scatter the cloud, there is brightness above and below, and the mind-like forms appear. The worldly people's nature constantly drift like those clouds in the sky. Good knowing advisor, intelligence is like the sun, and wisdom is like the moon. Intelligence and wisdom are constantly bright, but if you are attached to external, the floating cloud of false thought covers the self nature so that it cannot shine forth. If you meet a good knowing advisor, if you listen to the true and right Dhamma and cast out your own confusion and falseness, then inside and outside there will be penetrating brightness, and within the self nature all the 10,000 Dhammas will appear. That is how it is with those who see their own nature. It is called the clear, pure Dhamma body of the Buddha. So this is the first aspect of the three bodies. The three bodies of the Sammasambuddha can be easily understood if you were to develop the understanding of how the cultivation can be perfected. So these three bodies, they are not difficult to understand. First, you have to come to this world. You need a physical form and mind, a vehicle and a tool for you to come. And this is what they call your functional body that performs the function of a Sammasambuddha. But for your case, because you are going through the process of evolution, birth and death. So this functional body is your segmented body. Every life you come, the karma, law of karma, your karmic nature will condition one segment of your life. Like this life, you are a human being. Then my segmented life is this form and mind, which you call breathitude. So this one is this segment. Okay? So this segment, this is my functional body that performs the function of my nature. That's why it's karmically conditioned out for me to use the form and mind. It serves me. It doesn't belong to me. Where this is condition arising, causal phenomenon, through karma it comes. And it's not me, because this is impermanent, lead to suffering. Ultimately, it will disperse. It has the universal characteristics of impermanent, leading to suffering, non-self nature or empty nature, exactly like your form and mind. So when you understand this, then you are not deluded by it. You will not attach, you will not cling, you will not hold on to this. There will be no suffering. But living being is deluded. They think, they believe strongly that this is what they are. But since birth until now, everything is so real to you. What do you think? Do you think this is you? Yeah? Why do you say it's not you? But every moment, every instant, your egoic mind is holding on to it. Do you realize that? The egoic mind that don't have the wisdom still believe that this is you. Take for example Miss Lee. The least you get identity is so strong inside. Understand? The I see, the identity, the friend, the whatever people who know her call her by that. And every time you call, she will respond. Then how can you say, this is not me? This is your functional body, Anasana. Not to say entirely not you. This is your functional body, your form and mind, segmented life. Under the condition world, this one exists, understand? And this is subject to karma. Do you understand? That's why don't be deluded. You have the conditioned world and the unconditioned. You must understand both. You must not be deceived. This one exists. That's why you have to take care of this one. But this one is subject to karma. Even though it's not a permanent, unchanging entity. That's why in its ultimate truth, ultimate sense, it's not real. It's not you. But this one, within the conditioned world, is as real as it can be. Yeah. It has its own characteristic. It is subject to karma. That's why you have to take care of the form and mind. If you become heedless, the user of this form and mind, deluded, then this form and mind will create its own downfall, suffering, misery, karmic negativity. Then that karmic nature will fall. That's why in existence, you have to take care of all the three bodies. And what are the three bodies? First is your functional body, which has a lot to do with karma. You have to take care of this. To take care of this, you must train your mind. Connect to the true mind. Develop the wisdom, the perfection. Then when the wisdom is connected to this form and mind, this form and mind no longer deluded, then it will have wisdom. Then you can say this form and mind is enlightened, but it's not you. But this is condition arising, causal phenomena, impermanent, leading to suffering, empty. But you need this to cultivate, to live life, to go through life, to experience all of the karma. That's why the understanding is very, very deep. Within the conditioned world, there is an understanding behind. And that one is real. As far as the form and mind is concerned, within the conditioned world, there is such thing as life, as real as it can be. But within the ultimate truth, all these are impermanent, leading to suffering, non-self, empty. That's why these two understandings must come together, then only you can perfect yourself. So, developing the ability to connect to your true mind, to awaken and develop the wisdom, then only you can understand life and live life. Then when you start to cultivate and perfect your nature within, the perfection of your 10 perfection, and that one is called your spiritual body, your spiritual perfection. Then the summation of all these perfections will enter another nature which we call the spiritual nature. When you perfect the spiritual nature, then it will trigger off the sambhogayakaya, means the perfection of the wisdom and virtue leading to the perfection of the spiritual nature. So this spiritual nature, when you have fulfilled the cultivation and perfected, it will become your second body. They call it the spiritual sambhogaya kaya. Kaya is your body. So nimana kaya and sambhogaya kaya, you need the timing. That's why when Sakyamuni Buddha underneath the Bodhi tree that night, when he meditated, then the spiritual body come back to him, connect and went into the nimana kaya. These two, when it combine, it transform and become the Dhamma body, the pure Dhamma body. They call it the Dhammakaya. That's why he become the Sammasambuddha that teaches the Dhamma. So that is the third body. When the first two combine, then it trigger off the third body. So these are the three bodies that are possible. So for each and every one of us, we also have this three body, but the second and the third body not perfected yet. Understand? But the Nimanakaya is always there, the functional body, always there. Then when you complete your perfection of the spiritual body, that one combined with that one, the first body, it will trigger off the Dhammakaya. Yeah. So this is what the three body is all about. So what Hui Ning want you to understand is to have this ability to take refuge in that what they call Buddha nature within you, which is those three bodies. Okay? So we will end here. Huh? Yes, the sadhu, sadhu. Then we will go into the commentary maybe next week, huh? The next lesson. Okay, now what's the time? You can have your meditation. Oh, okay. 4:37. Okay, we are off the line and you can have about 20 minutes of meditation. Yeah? Yeah, thank you. I will ring the bell after about 20 minutes. Huh? Okay. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. Huh? For those that already have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Huh? Try to maintain whatever inner mindfulness, awareness, and sati or awareness that you have developed through your training. Huh? Especially the spiritual faculties. Huh? You have to constantly develop the stability of it. Then when it comes to stabilizing the sati, this is very important. Whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed, you need to stabilize it. To stabilize it means you have to meditate until your mind enters sati. The mind enters sati is a form of meditation training. You have to sit, relax, silent, away. The fourth support for awareness-based meditation, I repeat, for those who are new, maybe you can learn. Four support. For awareness-based meditation. These four are very important. The first one is just relax. Relax into all mind state. Whatever mind state that arises, relax into it. All mind states. Then the second one is maintain awareness. Maintain sati. Aware or sati. Then the third one is stabilize it 24 hours to stabilize it. And the fourth one is trust. These first three support is very important. So normally in formal meditation, a lot of people couldn't develop the meditation is they fail to relax. Relax is very important. You cannot relax means what? You are having problem with that. Either you have tension, stress, or worry. That's why you are not relaxed. Or anxiety, or fear. Means the mental hindrance are there. So if you don't have the ability to relax, your mind cannot be peaceful, cannot be calm. So you have to learn to relax body and mind. Relax into every mind state that arises. So most people, when they start meditating, they are given a method and a technique. Then they are not explained what meditation is. To use the true mind to meditate, they don't even know that there are two minds. They are only familiar with the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the condition arising mind, which is the thought itself. So that's where the problem is. So they were taught to know, to focus, to concentrate, or to meditate on the object of meditation, or chant and all those things. Not understanding why they do that. Because by doing that, they thought they are meditating. And that is where all meditation go wrong. The understanding is, this object of meditation, or the method and the technique that they introduce to you, is because they cannot make the mind peaceful, quiet, aware. They realize this mind is full of thought, think a lot, heedlessly thinking, wandering off, restless. The mental hindrances are there, but they didn't understand the teaching. Nobody taught them. So they were told to meditate, to focus, to concentrate, so that the mind can become calm and peaceful. But when they were told to meditate, they were never explain why you do all this. These are what we call methods and techniques, which are skillful means to anchor the mind, because the mind think a lot, become heedless. You want to be peaceful, you want to be quiet, but it wanders off very fast. So what do? They anchor the mind to something. They call it the object of meditation, or the method and technique that they ask you to focus on or note, like the 40 meditation object, or the so-called vipassana in inverted comma. They say note rising, falling, but they never tell you use what mind to note. They just say note. And who note? The thought note. When the thought is active, you cannot be mindful. So the second support cannot come in. Then when you are full of tension, full of the hindrance, you cannot relax. Then when you start to focus and concentrate, energy build up. Then if you are not careful, you will go into thought-based meditation, samatha meditation, concentration, focusing, jhana, and all those things. So the key to understanding meditation is to relax into whatever mind state that arises. So when you relax, what happens is the stress, everything, they will drop off. If you cannot relax, then you cannot meditate. So when you can relax body and mind, they are free of stress. Then your mind can quiet down, become peaceful. Through relaxing, you can develop the ability to be peaceful. Especially after you do your exercise. That's why a lot of people nowadays, modern day society, very stressful. What they do is they go and exercise until very tired. Then what happens? When you are very tired, you can sleep in there. A lot of them cannot sleep because of the stress. So they go and exercise or jogging or do whatever in the gym until they are very tired, then they can sleep. And this is also one of the skillful ways to circumvent the thinking, the restless mind. So they make themselves very tired so that they cannot think, then they can sleep or they can rest. But to develop meditation, you cannot go and do all these things. You can exercise for your health and all those things, but you cannot make yourself very tired until you are very exhausted. Then you might as well go and sleep. So to be successful in meditation, especially to develop the awareness-based meditation, you must learn how to relax. Relax means you must learn how to free your mind. Relax means don't allow all this wrong thought to condition your fear, worry, anxiety, restlessness, heedless thinking, and other things. So you have to talk to the mind. Please have mercy on me for this form and mind of mine. It wants to develop the training of the mind to be peaceful, to be aware. So have mercy on me. If the mind wants to do anything, wants to make you think or worry about certain things, you tell the mind, not now. After the meditation, I will attend to you. And when you do that, you try to talk to your thinking mind or your thought, then at least whenever it comes and haunt you or condition you into thinking or worrying about something or paying attention to something, because the mind has this type of attachment to unfinished problem in your daily life, where you live a life of disorder, means there are certain unfinished things that worries you, that prompt you to worry about, to think about. And this will continuously haunt you. That's why in the meditation, you cannot have peace, because this thought will come. Then you got a lot of fear, worry, anxiety, attachment, unfinished daily life situation or problem that you have to attend to. So if you can talk to the mind that over the next 40 minutes or 45 minutes that you want to meditate, please have mercy on me. Do not distract me, or do not come and condition me into unnecessary heedless thinking. Allow me to have the space to meditate. So every time the thought comes, talk to the thought, not now, after the meditation. After a while, this thought will not disturb you because you already allocate the time. So the mind will have this ability to relax. Unless you have serious illness problem or relationship problem or financial problem or health problem or career related, very serious, then that thought will keep on coming back to haunt you. That's why you cannot relax at all. And you find it very difficult to meditate because that is a hindrance. The mind that has fear, worry, anxiety become restless, incapable of peace or quietness or meditation. So first thing first is to keep your precepts so that you got less problem. That's why it starts with sila. To be successful in meditation, you must have sila or morality, so that you don't violate the moral rule, so that the law of karma will not condition fear, worry, anxiety from breaking of precepts and other things. So without sila, samadhi very difficult to kick in. The silent mind, the peacefulness of mind, the meditative mind. So first thing is to relax the mind by talking to the mind. Then your physical body, you must learn how to relax too. You know how you to relax the physical body, you know? When you are very tired, what happened to you? You were just like, because you are too tired to even think or breathe, understand? So you have to try to like relax in that mind state. I every time, initial day, during the early day, I try to relax the body and mind by completely freeing the body. Like I'm very tired, like this body is dead, I got no control over it. Then I just let it be, like a dead body like that. Then I just relax. But the danger is you will fall asleep, you will become too relaxed. So you have to maintain the balance. That's why later on when you are quite skillful already, you can do the lying down meditation. Relax, just aware. Then very fast you enter the free mind, the silent mind. Because your spiritual faculty is already there, you have already trained, you already understood what is. Then you just allow the mind to arise, the mental hindrance or whatever. Because through your meditation you will come to know that these are dependent originating, condition arising. The heedless thinking is just thought. And thought has this characteristic. If you don't give meaning, you don't react to it, you don't stir your mind, you don't have aversion towards it, like or dislike, means you don't attach, means the mental hindrance or sensual desire, ill will is not there. Then you can be at peace. So when the mental hindrance of sensual desire, ill will is not there, because you don't react and stir your mind, then you can be at peace. At peace means it starts to quiet down. Then sati take over. And sati is a spiritual faculty. So when sati take over, you realize you can become quiet. Initially it's one moment. Then as you have the understanding, the glimpse of it, you continue to relax and silent and maintain the awareness inside. Every time the thought comes, let it arise. Don't fight, don't suppress, don't control, don't do anything, just let it arise. Then finally, when you have this understanding that the original state of mind before stirring is already peaceful. The moment you are without thought, you are already in sati, aware. That is the beginning of meditation. Means you have to be patient to allow the thought to arise and pass away. Arise and pass away. Don't do anything. Don't react, don't stir, don't give meaning. Then it will slow down. Slow down. Then all of a sudden, it will be completely silent, still. That is awareness. That is sati. When that silent mind arises, relax into all mind state. Whether you become very peaceful, very calm, or whatever, you continue to relax into it. Then this awareness will deepen. This awareness or mindfulness or sati, the silent mind, will start to slowly, slowly become more and more pronounced, more and more frequent. Then as this one develops, you try to maintain it or stabilize it for as long as you can. The silent mind, just maintain it. Then when you can do that, even let's say you do anapanasati or rising, falling or whatever, initially you train your mind to be mindful. Mindfulness of the in and out breath, that is also the training. You are training to be aware. So when the mind is aware of the breathing, is in the moment, without thought, there is awareness. But as you do this, the continuous mindfulness will build up energy. You will go into absorption. And it can go into samatha too. That's why the key instruction is relax. If that anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, becomes so peaceful and so calm, you develop piti, spiritual calmness, spiritual joy. It will arise. Then it will make you very calm, absorb into it. You relax into it again. Then as you relax, this piti will become more and more subtle until it becomes what they call sukha. Sukha is spiritual blissfulness. Your mind becomes very blissful. It's not only peaceful. Like they call it the spiritual calmness born of the meditative training or spiritual rupture. Sometimes you feel like you rupture into a lot of joy, spiritual joy. Then when you relax into it, it becomes very quiet, very peaceful until you experience that blissfulness. Your mind really goes through a mind state that is so blissful. Blissful until you have tingling sensation and all those things like it's so blissful inside there. Then some people call it the goose pimple and all those things. Because that blissfulness really is a very, very strong mind state. It is very blissful. You really like it. Then if you are not careful, this is not an enlightenment factor, not like pity. A lot of people get attached into this state where they want to experience the bliss. They want it repeated. So every time they cannot get into this state, they say, my meditation is no good. So what happens is, when you experience the peacefulness, the blissfulness, you still continue to relax into it until that blissfulness transforms further, until the mind gets used to it. Then it will transcend the sukha. Then it will experience a type of mind which is very quiet, very peaceful, very still. We call it the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, or in Pali it's called pausati. Pausati is an enlightenment factor. You must hit that level. When you hit the level of a still mind, means this mind is so peaceful, so quiet, so still, so tranquil. It's like all your object of meditation, the breathing all become very subtle, like no more breathing. The rising, falling also like imperceivable, very quiet. Everything is so still, no thought, nothing, no movement. And that stillness of mind is your true mind. That is your meditative mind. That is pausati. When you hit that, your mind will enter sati. That is what you're supposed to train and stabilize. And when the mind enters sati, you will be very surprised at what that mind can do. That mind is very sensitive. Wherever you locate that mind after that, even at the subtle breathing will come back to you. It's like there's a lot of things within the subtle breathing. Like no breathing, but all the movement become magnified. then all your whatever movement become magnified. Well, when your mind is in sati, it will experience all movement as that sati movement. Then you stabilize that, and when you come out of meditation, you realize your body and your mind move as one. Everything is like a flow. Then your mindfulness like become continuous. Then as you come out of it, you are fully aware. Then all this movement, it will slow down by itself, but at the pace where you will develop the continuous mindfulness, then you realize everything you do, your body and mind as one. Then you are very calm, very peaceful, very still. Then you don't like to talk. In a retreat, you can have that experience quite easily. Then you stabilize that. And that is how you can carry it out into the daily activity. If in a retreat condition you can be mindful and stable, then you have to carry this ability back to your daily life and continue to stabilize it so that you can have that state of mindfulness even while you are living life. First, starting with the activity of your home base when you are at home. Whatever you are doing, well, there is nothing to disturb you from outside. So you can still continue. Even when you are cooking, doing your household work, or planning anything, you can still develop the daily mindfulness. Then when you are skillful at home, you try to bring that mindfulness out into the daily life, starting with your whatever activity you do. Like if you drive a motorbike or ride a bicycle, or drive a car, you go into it. Then your senses, your six senses are fully engaged. Well, when you go out into society, when you go out to your career environment, working environment, or when you go out into society's interaction, your senses are fully engaged. And that time you can maintain mindfulness because you have trained your mind until it has reached the state of paucity. The mind is already in sati. Then you will be very surprised one day as this stabilizes, whatever you see is like a flow, specific phenomenal awareness. Your awareness and the movement as one. Then everything you hear also is in sati. Everything you smell is also in sati, fully aware. Then everything you taste also in sati. Then your tactile all in sati, and you're fully aware, ever mindful. Then the arising of consciousness, the moment of perception, the moment of feeling, the moment of activity of mind, mental state, the moment of consciousness, it becomes very clear. Your awareness is with it, one by one. Like the whole thing is frozen. But you don't have to freeze it. It's just that mind that has been trained in sati can do that. That is the real training. When you can do that, I will salute you because you are destined for enlightenment after that. You can understand many, many things. Then that time, the daily mindfulness, as you develop and stabilize it, it will awaken. The Dhamma will continuously arise in your nature. Your nature will awaken to it. One by one, it will understand by itself. Technically, you don't need teacher after that. You will understand many, many things. Then later on, you read the book, the text, the teaching, because it comes from the silent mind. You will understand very fast. That's why technically, you don't need teacher. You will understand that. Then the fourth one, of course, is trust. That one, you don't need to worry. You don't have to do so early. That one, later on, let's say you have the condition, you become so stable already, then I will teach you how to do the lying down meditation. There's a book on it too. You start to lie down and do more of the lying down meditation. Then you relax and silent and maintain awareness at your heart area. Just silent everything and stay there in the form of meditation. Then in your daily life, you return your awareness to your heart area. Then when you do the lying down meditation, if you continue to relax, aware, follow the four support, and maintain the silence, don't try to know, Don't try to locate anything. Whatever that comes to the awareness, just be with it. Relax and be with it. Then finally, one day, it will detect the gateway. That all of your meditative energy, whether yin or yang, that you have built up, it will start to melt inside there. That is very soothing. Very, very soothing. Then the form and mind that go through that will know. Then there is a lot of pure energy that will be the result of that transformation. When the yin and yang energy melt through the gateway, there is a release of pure energy within your nature, within. Then it will open up a lot of things. You will start to understand how it functions. Then trust means no thought involved. Let the nature meditate. The nature move by itself. No interference from the thought. No noting, nothing. Don't try to like locate your mind where and put it where. Nothing. You just relax, silent, and feel around the heart area. Then you will detect by itself. Yeah. And that is the last support. You only do that after you have developed the stability and understanding. And most Kayanamita can do that, I think, in the not too distant future. Some maybe has already detected. Then you continue to just relax, silent and aware. And that nature will become very different. After that, a lot of things will happen to you, your form and mind. The mundane mind will collapse. The nature's true mind awareness will shine forth by itself. And during that time, you progress very fast. You will understand many, many things. And your sati become like automatic. When it shines forth, it will be always there. Like when the cloud disperses. You know what is this cloud or not? This cloud is what your emotion, your fear, your phobia, your mental state is all about. Your heedless thinking. Do you understand? Your reaction of mind. So all this become like cloud your nature. Because you are so preoccupied with all this thinking, this emotion, this feeling, reaction and stirring of mind. So these are like cloud floating within your mundane mind. Your mundane mind is the conscious mind. The conscious mind means, take for example, let's say a lake. A lake. You know what is a lake, isn't it? The water underneath the lake is very still, isn't it? But on the surface of the lake, what happened? There are ripples, isn't it? When the wind blow, when the branches drop on it, when the stone is thrown into it, it will ripple, isn't it? You can follow that example. So your mundane mind, your thinking mind, the heedless mind, your fear, worry, anxiety, emotion, scars of memory, worry, anxiety, restlessness, these are the ones that create ripples on your, they call it the conscious mind, the peripheral mind, means the conscious mind, which is not the bottom layer, deeper layer. The subconscious and the unconscious, they are the deeper layer. But before you are enlightened, the evil roots are still there, all inside there. But as you have this ability to root out all this ripple, means the heedless thinking, your emotion, your fear, your worry, your anxiety, all this born of your thinking mind, heedless thinking mind, the five mental hindrance. When all this clear, when the spiritual faculty take over, it's like all this cloud that cloud your nature, they disperse. When they disperse, what happens? The sunlight can come through, isn't it? Correct or not? Similarly, your true mind, that true nature which is awareness, will shine forth. Where you are not lost in thought, you are not preoccupied with all this thinking, the heedless thinking, the delusion and all that. Then when you are completely silent and still, no thought, free mind, then this nature shines forth. But most of the time, you cannot maintain it for long because you are not stable yet. So whenever you become heedless, all this cloud come back again. That's why most people who never stabilize the daily mindfulness, they find it very difficult to go beyond. They get stuck there. And most people get stuck at the stage of piti and sukha because they do thought-based meditation. Even those who do mindfulness, they get stuck there. Then after that, when they hit the subtle breathing, the very subtle, even rising, falling, they cannot feel anything. You know, the vipassana, what they teach you to meditate on? What do they teach you to meditate on? When you become so quiet, so still, so subtle. They say, do? You all have gone through that. They ask you to do sitting touching. Understand? Oh, to feel the very subtle feeling between the sitting, the buttock, and the one. What are you doing, actually? This sitting touching is to arise the mind again. Understand? Oh, that's why they cannot break through. They will get stuck there. Because they will use the thought to go and interpret the instruction. Say, oh, the teacher say, sitting touching. So they go and try to do the sitting touching using the thought. The thought try to feel, try to note the sitting and the touching. But you are not doing it with understanding. And you don't know why they ask you to do that. Because they themselves also may not know. So that's why you end up creating more thought. That's why you cannot go beyond that particular meditative phase. What you're supposed to do is, don't do anything. Just relax and silence completely the mind. Let the mind enter sati, stabilize, until pasati arise. Then you will understand the whole thing. But during the early day when this nature meditate, I can never follow their instruction. I don't want to do things that I don't understand. Then I just relax, silent, aware. Initially I do anapanasati, then I relax into it, silent. Then I reach this silent mind very fast. Very, very fast. Then even the early days when I started meditation, the mindfulness come. The whole thing become very beautiful. But I was trapped in that type of piti and sukha and very blissful state. Absorption state. Like very calm, very still, the energy very strong. Then later on when I came out to work, then I realized all this is a conditioned mind, not the true mind. Because when I came out to work, when I touched money, I realized there is still craving, desire. At first, my mind, no movement already. No, nothing can move it already. But later on, I realized this craving can come back. Means, not rooted out. There are latent tendencies still inside there, anusaya. So later on, when I met Acharyantra, then he mentioned about the highest meditation. Then I released all this out. Then I developed the daily mindfulness. When I developed the daily mindfulness, then only I realized that stillness of mind that I have developed during the early day, I didn't know what was that. That was the silent mind, the true meditative mind, pasati. That's why after that, within 2 weeks, my daily mindfulness came. Then I realized I can be in that state even in the midst of life. Then after that, that free mind that is in sati, continuously understanding. That's why it realized a lot of things, it awakened to a lot of things. Then the Dhamma like keep on unfolding, keep on arising. Yeah. Then after that, no need teacher. He just know what to do. Except the last guy when I met, he only explained to me what the gateway is and where it is. And when I knew that straight away, I went into it and I don't need him anymore. That's how all these are possible. Then when the transformation came, not only the cloud dispersed, after that the mundane mind collapsed. All this so-called cloud cannot build up anymore, cannot happen anymore. But there is no more delusion. That wisdom energy, the pure energy that arises through the gateway, it becomes so fine. Until that mundane mind, which is too gross, cannot stand up to it. That's why it collapses. There's a layer of consciousness coming down from the forehead here. Then suddenly it drops off after about 9 months, I remember. Suddenly the whole thing dropped off. Then from that day onward, I like got no mind. No mind. Because that mundane mind is gone. Then there is another mind they call the supramundane, or very fine mind. that one, which is from the nature, come out. And I need to learn how to use that mind, to live with that type of mind. Yeah. That's why all this can unfold. And it's very difficult to explain when people has not done it, and it's not easy to reach all this understanding and training, because this is for those who walk the further path, that it can arise, it can happen. But don't worry, initially you just need the first three. You just have to hit the silent mind and you are very good, very good. Then you will go through the sainthood way, everything, and you will realize your awakening. But after that, you need to make the vow if you want to walk further. Otherwise, after the sasana is gone, without the vow, the aspiration, the bodhisattva vow that I shared with you all, you will get lost again when the sasana is no more. Then without this understanding, life after life, when you come, it will be very difficult for you to encounter the true Buddha Dhamma, like the opening verse of our sutta. Hundreds of millions of aeons, you may not even encounter it. Okay? So this is the gist of what I need to share with you all today, on the meditation. So now you can report your meditation. We still have about 25 minutes for your meditation reporting. Or if you got any question related to meditation or the teaching, you can ask. Now is Q&A time, question and answer. Pass the mic out, Miss Lee. You just have to raise your hand. Give to me.
Good afternoon, Brother Teo. So just now you were talking about sensual desire at the earlier part of the, when we're going to the sixth patriot, and you said because we have a lot of sensual desire, we react and respond, and it's very hard to have a peaceful mind.
Yes.
And that's why meditation will be very hard.
Yeah, because these are mental hindrance. The first two, sensual desire, you will. So your sensual desire can be positive or negative. Negative is things that you don't like. That's why it's you will. So you keep on reacting and stirring your mind with every moment of sense experience, especially when you see something. You sure react on that, or your husband do something. Then the memory recall, this guy up to no good. That, or somebody you have a negative perception. Oh, this guy, he is the one that last time say all these things. I have to be careful. So your mind keep on reacting. Or somebody you like, let's say your good friend or what, who is very helpful, very cheerful, then you have a lot of joy. And this is positive attachment, no? Sensual desire. So you will be lost in thought. Either way, you will not maintain mindfulness, because the specific awareness that can allow you to be mindful will be distorted by your sensual desire. You will be that mind that is the memory, with the memory that trigger off the response of thinking, which is your thought. Thought is response to memory. Then this thinking will condition you to be preoccupied with what that thought tell you, and your views and your opinion will stir your emotion. And it will make you, that's why, happy and unhappy, pleasant and unpleasant. So when this become a habitual tendency, but throughout the day, if I were to ask you a question, how often are you at peace with the moment? Peaceful, not reacting, not commenting, just can accept the reality of whatever that arises. And you can have a lot of joy, a lot of peacefulness, a lot of stillness and silence, while at home, while living life, while meeting people, while driving everything. Your mind can be just in that equanimity state. You go and check. Most of you, hardly any moment you are at peace. Maybe you can be in that joyful mood, understand, when things go your way, when good news come, you're very happy. But actually you are lost in thought, understand? Because that excitement is a mental state, sankhara. and you get attached to it because there is so much joy and wow, I make it already, I did it, very successful. This is good news. Of course, this is happy. But suddenly, one very negative news come. What happened? Then you panic, you know. Then you will react to it, you know. Then your mind will stir again. So human being, living beings, mind, they oscillate between the like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, happy and unhappy. That's why the worldly condition, they keep on arising and passing away, and it affect them. So this is what they call habitual tendency. If throughout the day you do this, creating mental hindrance or sensual desire, you will like and dislike. There is no way you can become peaceful. Understand? There is a mental hindrance. It will hinder you. So what must you do? You have to straighten your view, not to allow it to stir like that anymore. Then you have to develop the wisdom to see things as they are. People are just the way they are. Last time, what my mind perceived that situation is not important anymore. But this will condition me to react. Means I preempt what I see and observe. So now, through this mindfulness meditation, I just want to observe. Like I observe a kid, if I don't prejudice against the kid's behavior, if I don't comment and react using my views and opinion, then I can understand the kid better. Understand? Otherwise, I will preconceive or pre-perceive what that kid is doing. This guy, up to no good, naughty fellow, always do this. This is not seeing anymore, no. This is your judgment, no. When you start to judge, you never observe, you never see. But if you don't judge, you just observe, then suddenly you will see something very cute in him, one. Or he is just the way he is. Naughty fellow do naughty thing. Understand now? Innocent people do innocent thing. Then like deluded people do deluded thing. Angry people do angry thing. So you will start to understand. Then you can be at peace with everybody, you know. Not only the kid, no. You will laugh at it. And it's just, oh boy, okay. Then you can teach them. Yeah, you observe. So likewise, when you start to change the way you live life, then your sensual desire, you will like and dislike your mental hindrance. The first two, sensual desire, you will start to like slowly dissipate. Because you straighten your view to accept things as they are, not to stir, not to react. Then when you are always at peace, there is so much joy. You see an angry person coming and scold you, abusing you, also you laugh, you smile. But he's just the way he is. No. You can accept him for what he is. Then even your mother, then she laughs and smile. Then she is at peace. Well, kids are like that. They haven't learned. They go through life. They will learn sooner or later. So you don't get angry and agitated. Because when you do that, you suffer for nothing. Then through your anger, you react. It's an evil root, make you evil. Then the kid also suffer. So all this is what meditation is all about. So coming back to your question, I think you haven't asked that question. You just mentioned this. I want to explain this so that you understand. So now you can go ahead and tell me what is the question that you want to ask.
So with regards to that sensual desire and evil, right, in straightening the view, right? So is straightening a view, you know, like we reason out with ourselves when that arises, or is it a wisdom that can arise through a lot of meditation practice?
Very good question. Thank you so much. This is what will arise when a person really inquire. Because if you don't try and do it, you can never ask this question. And this is a very important question. Well, it will break her understanding so that she can move on. So the question is it through reasoning or knowledge that we can develop this straightening of view? Or is there a meditation that you can cultivate that will lead to this understanding? Isn't that your question? And this is precisely what a cultivator will ask. Like last time, Ingby also asked something along that line. Then after she listened to what my explanation was, then she followed exactly what I taught her. You see, there are three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. Each and every of these turnings lead to a type of wisdom, understanding. The first turning is through listening to the Dhamma. They call Sutta Mayapanya. When you listen to the Sutta, which is the proclamation of truth by the Buddha, if you have your past cultivation, you can awaken. And that wisdom that comes with it is called Sutta Mayapanya. Means through listening to the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha, you will have the wisdom. Like what happened to Kondanya. When the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta was expounded, before the Sutta end, he already became a Sotapan, because it's his past cultivation. Then the Buddha said, let's say the first turning after he proclaimed, you still cannot understand. It's like in the school days, when you study a new subject, you go to Form 4, let's say you are a science student, the teacher teach chemistry, physics, biology, you cannot follow. You cannot really follow. So the first lecture, you will be like blur, blank. So it's like those first turning cannot understand. The Buddha said, never mind. If you cannot understand, what you should do is, you should go into the second turning. Second turning means to reflect and contemplate on what the Buddha has taught, then to inquire into it. Why did the Buddha say this? How can I understand this? It's just like the first noble truth of suffering. Why did the Buddha say birth is suffering? Old age, sickness and death is suffering. Separation from loved one is suffering. Not able to get what you want in life is suffering. Then in short, the final summary. Then when you inquire, then you come to realize, if I can't even understand what the Buddha say, that birth is suffering, then I will have a problem, isn't it? Well, I go through birth, old age, sickness and death without knowing that this is suffering. Then I have to understand what is suffering. So first, why? Now I understand. If I don't understand, I suffer without knowing why I suffer. That will be double delusion. So I don't want to end up that way. Then I inquire further. How can I understand what the Buddha said? This is contemplative wisdom. This is not reasoning, no. This is with a calm mind, with a clear mind, I inquire. Why did the Buddha say birth is suffering? Then I will reflect, contemplate. Means I recall through my recollection of the birth process, where I have gone through life, especially as a mother, you give birth before. Then you recall all the birth process from conceiving until the delivery and all those things. Then even after delivery and all that. Then as you reflect and contemplate, you like recollect through memory. But with the silent mind, in creative awareness, you recollect. You are quietly recollecting the whole scenario through memory recollection. As you recollect, you don't judge. But when you hit certain point, you realize, yeah, this is suffering. That time, morning sickness, vomiting and all those things, remember? Then later on, when the child got problem or when your pregnancy develops further, your movement are all affected. Understand? Then if you are not careful, not mindful, you can fall, you can slip, and you can get into complication. And all this is suffering. Then not only the vomiting and the morning sickness, but later on, you realize the baby, if it's alive, it will kick you. Understand? Then you can feel I felt my wife one before, but she showed it to me. It like swelled up, then it will subside. Then later on, because you love the baby so much, what happened is suddenly it doesn't kick anymore. Then what happened? You got fear, you got worry. Hey, what happened to my baby? How come now don't kick already? You scared something wrong. Then that fear, the anxiety, and all this is suffering. Then the birth process is suffering. So as you go through all this, then you understood what the Buddha said. But these are the realities of life and existence. Not only I have to go through. In the five daily contemplation, the Buddha said, you have to reflect and contemplate. But these pertain to the physical body. And this body is not me. And every living being who lives long enough will go through birth, sickness and death. Old age, sickness and death. And this reality, if you go through it without wisdom, you cannot accept that reality, you will suffer. Or then you start to develop this understanding. Then what happens is, after you have this understanding already, sometimes you can reflect on old age, getting old, sickness, through your parent or grandparent, then yourself getting sick. And as you go through, you realize body is just a body, not me. So when the body is sick, my mind may not be sick. So suffering is attachment, craving, clinging, grasping. So this understanding, as you reflect and contemplate, you stabilize it. Then it will be within your nature, without you knowing. And this is second turning wisdom. They call it Chintamaya Panya. So what happens is, as you go through life after that, the next time, let's say you go through birth again, you can accept it already. You will straighten you. You will not panic already. But the reality is, conditioned like that, things will be. What I need to do is, I need to check it up, I check it up. I need to follow up, I follow up. I will not complain. I will not get angry, agitated, or blame the child. Why is this child so mafan one? Every time give me this problem. Because this is the reality. Conditioned like that, things will be like that. You got two choices. React to it and become miserable, afflicted. Or at peace with it, understand it, develop the love and the compassion, and see through it. Understand? And this is wisdom. This is stretching. So it's exactly like your mental perception. When you see that person, where you reflect and contemplate, why did I react? He is just the way he is. Why can't I accept him? Because of your memory, your conditioning. Where in the past, you perceive him with negativity. Where that time, you don't have the Dhamma. You don't understand. You cannot see things as they are, like the Buddha said. So now I can see things as they are. He is just the way he is. No right, no wrong. Deluded people do deluded things. Fearful people do fearful things. Selfish people do selfish things. He is just the way he is. Then I can be at peace. Even my husband, my loved one, or my mother, I can love with all my sincerity. I care. But I will not attach because I will advise the mother. This is part of the First Noble Truth reality. All is sickness and death. Everybody got to confront. And then you remind the mother. We have to confront. We need to ask for forgiveness. We ask for forgiveness. We need to make aspiration for causes and conditions for us to recover. We help and do. But we won't attach. Should anything go wrong, it pertains to the form and mind. Not real. Not me. And then there is no fear. There is constant mindfulness and awareness of the Dhamma. And this Dhamma very funny one. It's like what Eng Bi come to realize. He called it Yoniso Manasikara. Wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So this Yoniso Manasikara, like I say, you have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. If you don't contemplate and reflect through the second turning, it's not there. But if you have reflected, contemplated through the second turning, yeah, it will come on. So at the moment when you confront the First Noble Truth reality, straight away this Dhamma will arise on. Yeah, you have contemplated. Yeah, this is the reality of life and existence. Not only me. Every living being who lived long enough had to experience, go through. Then I got two choices. React to it and become miserable and afflicted. Or accept it and move. And act. Act with what? Noble Eightfold Path. Peacefulness of mind. Right view. Not to react. Not to blame. Not to be agitated. Not to become unhappy. That's how you straighten your view. Then as you straighten your view, you can come to terms with the reality, with life. Then every moment of mental perception, as you go through life, you realize you are more calm, more peaceful. Your view is no longer like before. Panic, agitated, stirring, reacting, heedlessly running around. No more. You are now calm, peaceful, aware, can accept the reality. Then reflect and contemplate. This one is the body. Body go the way of nature, not me. So when body has problem like disease and all those things, if my mind can accept that reality and be at peace with it, then body is sick, but the mind will never be sick. So what it will do is, it will act. When you act with a calm mind, without the fear, worry, anxiety, there is no negative energy field, understand not? Then there is calmness, composure, born of your spiritual faculty, your saddha and virya, because you understand. Then you have sati, you have clarity. Then you ask yourself, what can I do? How can I overcome all this amicably so that I can gain back my life, so that I can develop the understanding to make a decision and move on. So this is very important. So if you need to see another doctor for second opinion, go ahead. If you need to see somebody for treatment or cure, go ahead. If you need to consult people, go ahead. No more blaming, no more arguing, no more fearful. All the negative mind state, no more. You have straightened your view, you have developed the wisdom, you have contemplated the Dhamma. He know me, he know you. So the attachment all will be gone. Then you do your duty. But this form am I got a duty? Your mother gave birth to you. You have gratitude towards her. Understand that? For she gave you life. Then she gave you all the support, the education or whatever. So this gratitude you can express, you can invoke the power of merits for them. By the power of whatever merits and wholesomeness that my parent has done for me. Where you are a cultivator. The merits that they do upon your nature is very powerful. May it arise the causes and conditions for them to recover to good mind state. To have this Dhamma understanding so that they can also endure through and develop the right understanding to live the noble life, the peaceful life, the happy life of somebody who has the Dhamma. All this is what you can do. And you will just focus on all this and do it beautifully. You will be no longer like normal human being. Panic, worry, cry, do all those funny things, no more. So this wisdom can only arise through contemplative second turning understanding. Then of course when you meditate that time, you can also awaken through the third turning. Bhavana maya panya. Wisdom born of bhavana is very powerful. When that one comes, no need to reflect, no need to contemplate, it's inside. That wisdom, that understanding is there. Whenever anything happens, it will understand. The form and mind will know that this is not real, not me. And that Dhamma is so powerful, there is nothing like during the Buddha's time. You remember? One life as a Bodhisattva, the son died because of the smoke and the serpent that actually killed the son. He never cried. He never lament. He never even arise any like mental sadness or anxiety or what. He just continued with his life like a normal being. Then he saw somebody pass by. He passed the message, he said, tell my wife today on the way back to bring only food for two, not for three. And bring some perfume, white clothing. Then straight away the wife knew one of the children died already. And then he just calm. No tears, nothing. How come they have the wisdom to accept this reality? Because they had the Dhamma. This is not me. Even this form of mind is not me. How can that form of mind of the child be me? These are condition arising entity. That's why when the king asked him, the Bodhisattva replied, whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease. So for that son, he said, it has arise and it has ceased. So no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. Means this is a reality. Pass away already. You cry, you lament, no use. And that's how the Bodhisattva understood. Then he said, maybe you are different. The mother more attached. So he asked the wife, you know, the king asked the wife. Again, the wife replied the same, without tears. Whatever that is of the nature to arise is of the nature to pass. What has arisen has already passed. No amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. And the king was so amazed, he never believed. First, the king thought it's a naughty son. The Bodhisattva said, no, he's a very good son. Full of fellow piety, full of understanding. Then why don't you cry? Then the Buddha repeat all those understanding. That's why you will not lament. You will do what you have to do. Because these are condition arising Dhamma, dependent originating. The five degrees of form and mind is karmically conditioned. It's not you. It's a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this world. Just like your loved one, your parent, your children, they also have the same. So take care of karma. Train your mind to be aware, to be heedful. Avoid all evil, follow the advice of the Buddha, do good, and purify your mind. Then you need to ask for forgiveness, repent. Then invoke power of merits. Determine not to repeat all this. This is how you cultivate, and you will become beautiful. Like, and you must have this understanding, life after life, following the Bodhisattva vow and aspiration that I have passed to you all. The book will come out later. Eh? Now I only send out for proofreading and all those things. Later on, I think those who didn't receive will receive. Then you will understand. Yeah. We are from the recording in the what they call our website. You can go and listen to the 4 talk that I deliver on the Bodhisattva way. They are all there. Then the transcript, I hope to finalize it soon, within the next 1 or 2 months. Then hopefully before the end of the year, the book can come out. Then this one will be very clear, and living beings will have the understanding as how you can cultivate to develop this ability to perfect the nature. It's not difficult when you understand. When you don't understand, it can be terribly difficult. But when you understand, it's really very simple. Very, very simple. And the vow will take you along. It helps you to deliver the cultivation. Okay. Hopefully that explains your question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. We should thank me for the good question. We rejoice one more time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah, I remember during the early days, she asked a lot of very good questions because that time she was searching, I think. Yeah, when at the Tuesday class. So now you start again. Very good. Last time was Mindy. Mindy also asked very good questions. Then recently, Eng Bi, because of the cultivation, she also asked a lot of very good questions. Then this will give people faith, because like Eng Bi mentioned, is it when he saw this wisdom coming out, Yoniso Manasikara, because she said she can be mindful with the still mind, the silent mind, in a free mind state, not a conditioned state. The mind can be still, silent, impassive, when she was alone, not doing anything, not interacting with anybody. It's very easy to be in that state. That's why I knew. I said, sadhu, because stability is there already. Then she asked me, she at first explained how she understood all this. She said, with that mind, it's so beautiful. Is it? There was one day, is it, where all of a sudden he saw this defilement coming out. Like it's a type of wrong thought. Then he said, very funny, you know. She didn't even do anything. At that moment, that understanding, the Yoniso Manasikara just spring out. Then the Dhamma came out. Thing is just the way it is. They are just the way they are. No right, no wrong. Then from that understanding, straight away, he said, the awareness, no need to do anything. The defilement just ceases. Then she realized to prevent the arising of the wrong thought is so simple. When the Yoniso Manasikara means this wisdom at the moment of sense experience, when you have, it straight away ceases. It cannot come out. That's why I give faith to a lot of cultivators. At first, they don't know that it can happen in that way. And this is what wisdom is all about. When it arises, it is there, connected to the form and mind, like I always explain. The form and mind that has that even second-turning wisdom, it never gets lost on. It's always with your nature. Then when the time comes, it will come out. And when you reflect and contemplate on it, because it's second-turning, you straight away will understand what. And you will not lament. You will not become like before, deludedly cling, attached, and worry. No more. Well, all this is the thought. The thought that conditions you to worry, panic. We have that thought project. The reality is, happened already. So, accept the reality. Like the Buddha, to be Bodhisattva at that time. The son died already. Die means die. Do what you have to do. No more the question, if I have not asked him to follow me, this thing would not happen. If my wife had not suggested that we come here today, this thing, all this is rubbish, isn't it? It's no more a reality. So the thought, think, project, And make you what? Make you angry. Angry with yourself. That's why you got remorse. The stupid fellow. If I had not thought of that, if I had not brought my son, this thing would not. Then blame your wife. Understand? This is all not a reality. The reality is happened already. Condition like that, things will be like that. And what is happening? The Dhamma must surface. This is not a reality. These are conditions arising. Entity. The form of mind is not me. It's subject to karma, yes. There are causes and conditions behind. In the past, maybe the boy killed the snake or the serpent. So because of karmic conditioning, now he becomes the victim. He gets killed back. Understand or not? So when you understand, you accept the reality, you will not lament, you will not get angry, emotional, fearful or unhappy. You just move on with your life. This is what Dhamma is all about. So this is a very important understanding, very penetrative. That's why the enlightened being is very different. The mind is not like the normal living being anymore. Because the wisdom that is connected to the form and mind immediately will surface. You will understand what? Then you no need to use knowledge or logical thinking. Wow, what did Brother Theo say? See things as they are, accept them for what they are. Yeah, lah, I must not react. All this is knowledge, understand? This is not the real understanding. You are using thought to rationalize. And this is not real wisdom. And when you are caught in certain situation, you break down again. You panic again. Then you try to recall what I say. No use. Because recalling what the Buddha say and what I say means you yourself didn't do the contemplation and reflection before that. If you have done it, you no need to recall what I say. Understand? It's just like the Buddha said, I only show you the way. You must walk the path yourself. Means he tell you there are these three turning. You must reflect and contemplate and develop the understanding. Then only you can deal with it. Otherwise, you only use people's knowledge. Understand? Well, you quote the Buddha. You quote your teacher. You quote me. No point. That's why I say, don't ever quote me. Understand? But if you have the understanding, you can quote and use whatever you like. Just like how I quote the Buddha and Krishnamurti. When the understanding is there, you can quote. No problem. It's no longer that delusion. But before you have, please, cultivate. Develop your own understanding. Then when you understand, you dare to use your own word on. You dare to use your own understanding to overcome whatever situation that you confront in life. And that is the real Dhamma. That's why sometimes like Song Day or what, even Alicia at certain time, they are very confident. They will tell you exactly what this thing is on. And like Engbi and all those things. Because they saw it. And the Dhamma is Pachetang, can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That's why they will understand it one. And no more doubt one. No more question one. If you still got doubt and got question, chances is it's not the true understanding yet. But don't doubt yourself, understand or not? That's why I say when you cultivate, be confident, have sadha, virya. Just do, don't try to know. Then when the understanding comes, like the Buddha say, this wisdom is pachetang, can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. No more doubt one, no more question one, no more checking with the Theo, checking with who. Don't have such thing one. You will understand one. It is like that one. Because nature is true. When you have the truth, you will understand nature. You will understand the reality. Then the phenomenal world, the characteristic of all phenomena, the impermanent, suffering state, non-self, all become very clear. Then they will not have any more power over you. They can no longer deceive you. That's why you liberate. The mind becomes free. The form and mind become very different. And this form and mind that is connected to the wisdom, you can say is enlightened. But this form and mind is not you. Because it's karmically conditioned now. It's conditioned arising, impermanent. No permanent unchanging entity. How can it be you? So the enlightened being will not be deceived by all this one. That's why there is no mark of a self cultivating. No mark of a being getting enlightened. That's why in the Heart Sutta, in true emptiness, there is no attainment. Understand? No Dhamma, nothing. no old age sickness and death. Because in the unconditioned world, ultimate truth, all this ceases to be. This only pertains to the conditioned world, the form and mind and all those things. Okay? We end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We better end. 6:05, 07, 09 already. Sorry. Okay, let us recall to mind all the wholesomeness. Then we will share all these merits, starting with the devas. Akka sata cha bhumatha deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu lokasa sada itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati diya idang me nyatina hotu hontu nyatayo idang me nyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatina hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Sakyamuni Buddha and all the worthy ones, then we can end.
Thank you.